Okay. Clearly, that's real read back to 13:47-50 again. A kingdom kingdom of the, again, the kingdom of the heaven is like unto a net that was cast into the sea and gathered of every kind, which when it was full, they drew unto the shore and sat down and gathered the good into the vessels, verily casting the bad away. So shall it be at the end of the world. Let's do that again. So shall it be at the beginning of the end of the world, at the beginning of the 12th hour of parabolic time. And that took place starting at the beginning of the 12th parabolic hour, and at the Passover 2002 Kermit, Texas. And one day I will have that disclosed of you, all those dates and times, connecting all of those parabolic time hours that Vicky Hall put on his prophetic time clock. But he only drew his time clock to represent 11 hours a day. I modified his time clock so where Yahshua said to the disciples in John 11:9, are there not 12 hours a day? Work while you have a life. So I had to modify B.T. Hollis' chart. I had to show where he had left out the 12th parabolic hour. He called the 11th parabolic hour the last hour of the day, and I just couldn't let that stand. And I said, so I modified the whole chart and straightened it up. Clearly, then that represents the gospel church. Now, this cannot stand. These two words, gospel church, has got to take on a different appearance. It's going to have a new look about it, because the gospel plainly translates into faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, and that's chapter 10 of the Hebrews, and that's the new and living way of the New Testament. So the gospel was created by the English people with John Wesley, the Methodist. They said God spelled it out, the good news of salvation. He spelled it out in the law of Moses, and you'll find that in the commandments of the sanctuary of Leviticus 23:1-44. So we'll just do it this way. Having said all of that, I'll reread this now. Clearly, the net represents the teaching of the plan of salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, the new and living way, Hebrews 10:19-20. That is to say, through the veil, that is to say, through his flesh, which are taught both, which are caught. Let's do that again. Clearly, the net represents the teaching of the plan of salvation of the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews 10:19-20, into which are caught both the hypocrite, that is, the hypocrite meaning someone that acknowledges the truth with his mouth, but he disavows it by his actions, and saint accordingly. In the time of the first fruit harvest, that's the time of the harvesting 144,000, that comes out of the Adventist church, the harvest, parentheses, the judgment, in the house of the Yahweh. Now, it didn't say in the house of the Seventh-day Adventist, you'll want to notice here. That's very important. It says in the house of the Yahweh. Okay. So the house of Yahweh today is the house of David. that succeeded the house of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in 2002, and which is the house of Yahweh. For Yahweh sent his son Yahshua to sit on the throne of David in this house of David, here in the 12th parabolical that we're in right now. So this is where we're operating from. We're operating from the throne of David in the 12th parabolic tower and in the house of David. That Yahweh made a covenant with David back there in the 1,000 years before the cross. That he would never allow a man to sit upon the throne of David. At any time when that throne of David is set up and put on hold until a point of time for it to rise again, and that point of time has come since 2002, at the end of the world, at the end of the beginning of the world. The house of David is set up in the last parabolic hour, and it occupies a whole parabolic hour of the 12th, the house of David, and during the harvesting of both the 144,000 and the sacred fruits, the Gentiles, Revelation 7, 9, and 10. So clearly, the net represents the plan of the Salvation Church, and that's the house of David, and through which are caught both the hypocrite and the saint. Accordingly, hypocrite also means a sinner, it means heathen, it means a wicked. Accordingly, in the time of the first fruit harvest, the judgment in the house of Yahweh, at the end of the world, at the end of the beginning of the world, and the last prophetic hour of the 12th, while probation is still open, Matthew 13:49. It lends you to think that at the end of the world means after probation is closed. That's the way he understands it, and that's where he teaches it. Because that's wrong. Matthew 13:45. For the angels sever the wicked from among the just, not the just from among the wicked. But in the second fruit harvest, the judgment in the world, the separation is the reverse. For the just are taken out from among the wicked, not the wicked from among the just. So he says the Revelation. And I heard another voice from the heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not the partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. Revelation 18:4. Plainly, the judgment in the house of the Yahweh is in the beginning of the harvest for the first fruits, and it starts with the prophet that's over the candlestick of Laodicea, the Adventist Church. And that prophet was Brother Stephen Johnson, and that candlestick was in operation with Brother Johnson's administration from 1970 to 2003. The seventh candlestick was in operation, but the seventh candlestick came to its end with Brother Johnson when he was cast out. He was cast out with his seventh candlestick and everything that went with it, in which the hypocrites, Brother Johnson was the ringleader of the hypocrites of Gilead Center, as the tares are burned, but as the bad fish, they are cast out, and the judgment and the Babylon in the world. Though not the bad, but the good are taken out and brought into the purified house of the Yahweh, that is, as we know now, is the everlasting kingdom of heaven, Daniel 2:44-45, that is set up in these last days here on the earth in the days of these ten toes on this image represents all the nations of the world, all the kingdoms. That's when this kingdom of Yahweh is set up here on earth in the 12th parabolic hour. And Yahweh has sent his son to sit upon the throne of David in this kingdom of David, to lead out in harvesting and leading the purified saints. Now, he's got the saints that's going to make up his army. There's not going to be no bad fish in this army. Now, Sid's going to be in charge of all saints that are going to help him harvest the world. And no sinner. And where there is no danger of the plague. For this same truth concerning the house of Yahweh again comes unto us in these words. Isaiah 66:15, 16, 19, 20. For behold, the Yahshua will come with the fire, and with his chariots like the whirlwind, for the rending of his anger with the fury, and for his rebuking with the flames of the fire. For by the fire and by this sword will, and that fire is actually, is by the Spirit, by his Holy Spirit. For by the fire with the power of the Holy Spirit, and by his sword will the Yahshua plead with all flesh, and the slain of the Yahshua shall be many. And it will, and I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nation, unto Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, that draw the bow, unto Tubal, and Avan, unto the isles afar off, that have not heard of my fame, and neither have seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. Your Gentiles are blood kin brethren to the Jews now, by virtue of Japheth, the youngest son of Noah, the third son of Noah. It says in Genesis chapter 10 that he was the father of the Gentile nations, and Japheth was a Hebrew, and that later on be called the house of Israel. They shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto the Yahshua, no, unto the Yahweh, the Father, out of all nations, upon the horses, and in the chariots, and in litters, and upon the mules, and upon the swift beasts, unto my holy mountains, Jerusalem, says the Yahshua. As the children of the Israel bring an offering and a clean vessel, and into the house of the Yahshua. Again, we here see that those who escape the slain of the Yahshua in the house of Yahweh, obviously, the first fruits, the servants of Yahweh, are sent unto the nation who know not the Yahweh. And from there they bring all their brethren, the second fruits, unto the purified house of Yahweh, where there is neither sin nor sinners, and where the plagues of the Babylon therefore do not fall. We have now positively seen that there are first and second fruits, one from the church. Now, Vitalis is going to tell you that when he says church, he's referring to the Seventh-day Adventist church. Well, this is true. They produce the first fruits harvest, but when they do, the Adventist church automatically comes to their end. Once that first fruit is taken out of them, then the Adventist church dries up and becomes no more. And the 144,000 is the first fruits that are the sons of the Jacob. They're the descendants of the 12 tribes of Jacob, of which Judah was one of Jacob's sons, and we are of the house of David, the tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, Genesis 49:10. A scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until the Shiloh comes, and Shiloh is Yahshua, and unto the great multitude, which no man can number, Revelation 7:9, that's the Gentiles, that great multitude. And they're blood kin brethren to the 144,000, the 12 tribes of Israel. Who gathers the first fruits? If the first fruits gather the second fruits, let us find our answer by the reading, Revelation 14, 14 to 19. And I left, and behold, a white cloud of upon the cloud burning, set like unto the Son of the Yahweh, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. And another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice unto him that sat on the cloud, thrust in thy sickle, and reap, for the time is come for thee to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. And he that sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. And another angel came out of the temple which is in the heaven, he also having a sharp sickle. And another angel came out from the altar which had power over the fire, and cried with a loud cry unto him that had the sharp sickle, saying, thrust in thy sharp sickle, and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. And the angel thrust in his sickle into the earth, and gathered the vine of the earth, and cast it into the great winepress of the wrath of the Yahweh. Okay. I may go over. Here we are again told that there are two reapings, one by the Son of the Man, and another by an angel. For the reaping by the Son of the Man, Yahshua, precedes the reaping by the angel. Son of Man, therefore, gathered the first fruits, and the angel gathered the second fruits. For the vines, not the fully ripe grapes, he cast into the winepress. For the Son of the Man himself obviously reaps the first fruits, because his servant, figuratively the angel of the church of the Laodiceans, are in no condition for the doing such a work. For they themselves are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked and know it not. Well, now, this needs some modifying, but I'm not going to do it right here, because the whole church is not, the Adventist church is not miserable, poor, blind, and naked. If it was, you would not get the 144,000 of the first fruits harvest out of her, if that were the case. That's the reason why the angel, Yahshua, this angel, said Yahshua is the one that said to the angel of the seven temples, at Revelation 3, 14 to 17, says, thou art, that was a, he's addressing that, the prophet, the head of the candlestick, not the whole candlestick, not the members of the church. He just says, you, the preacher, you're the one that's naked, and you know it not. And you're miserable, you're poor, blind, and naked, and you know it not. The whole church is not blind and naked, because if that were the case now, the Kermit, if the whole Gilead Center is blind and naked, I would, and my wife and I and all day long would have never escaped the judgment there if that were the case. If it was Brother Johnson and all those that signed that piece of paper that threw me and my wife and Ellen out of the church, they're the ones that ended up being designated as naked. But not everybody. The ones they threw out were fully dressed with the kingdom of heaven, for the looking down unto this very time, the spirit of the prophecy, and the Isaiah's day said, Isaiah 63:5, and I looked, and there was none to help, and I wondered that there was none to hold, therefore my own arm brought salvation unto me, and my fury it upheld me. Here you note that when the time came, there was not even one among his servants to uphold the work of the harvest, and consequently, the Yeshua himself did the work without them. For the second reaping, however, he uses the guiltless servant through the first truth, the 144,000, as prefigured by the angel with the sharp sickle, Revelation 14:17-18. And just as there are two fruits and two reapings from the two different places, the church and the world, there are, as shown before, also two ways of the harvesting. At first, the bad are cast from among the good, and at last, the good are called out from among the bad. These are some of the signs and events that precede the kingdom of the glory. For the second coming of the Yeshua, then too, there are other signs, the first of which is seen from the parable of the Matthew 25, verse 1-12. Then shall the kingdom of the heaven be likened unto 10 virgins which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. For they that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. Okay. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at the midnight there was a cry made, Behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go you out to meet him. Then all these virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. But the wise answered, saying, Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you, but go you rather unto them that sell, and buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him unto the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterwards came also the other virgins, saying, Master, Master, open unto us. But he answered and said, Verily I say unto you, I know you not. In this parable, it is seen that the church is likened unto 10 virgins, 5 of whom do not avail themselves of the extra oil, the special truth for this time, which would be present truth. That is, these 5 do not give heed unto the truth of the judgment of the living, the separation or the purification of the church. When the cry is made, Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go you out to meet him. All 10 virgins see that the light of their lamps is gone out, for they see that the message of the judgment of the dead is passing. Quickly then, the 5 wise virgins refill their lamps with the extra oil which they have stored in their vessel, and go on to meet the bridegroom. But the 5 foolish virgins, those who thought there was no need for the extra oil, no need for an extra message, the message of the judgment of the living, find themselves in the gross darkness. Yes, they find themselves without the light that the message of the judgment of the living unfolds. Upon the discovering of their foolish neglect, they rush in for the obtaining of the oil. They rush up to the door for the obtaining of the oil that has the for the light on the subject, that lights the light on the subject, or the new present truth subject. But in the meantime, the door has been shut for probationary time for the virgins. That's not the same probationary time that for the world when it finally closes. The church has closed. So let me read this again. Really, the five foolish virgins are those who thought that there was no need for the XO, that is, any new light, any present truth, or anything. No need for an extra message. They think we got the last message anyway. They don't see no need for an advanced new message to add to theirs. The message of the judgment for of the living. So the Adventist church did not have the message of the judgment of the living. V.T. Hall said they did, because he had it. Right? And V.T. Hall didn't have it either, because he was part of the Adventist church and Adventist movement. The Adventist movement wasn't given the judgment of the living. They were given the judgment of the dead. For find themselves in a gross darkness, yes, they find themselves without the light that the message of the judgment of the living unfolds upon the discovering of their foolish neglect, for they rush for the obtaining of the extra oil, that is, for the light, a new light, advanced light on the subject. But in the meantime, the door has been shut for the probationary time for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, for the virgin, has closed. Now, this is something wrong with this. I'll read that to you again. But in the meantime, the door has been shut, parenthesis, the probationary time, says for the virgins, has closed. The church has failed. Well, what V.T. Hallett failed to differentiate here is that the probationary time for the five foolish virgins had closed. But for the five wise virgins, it did not close, because of the fact that the five wise virgins are the only one that had the extra oil. And so whenever the lights for the foolish virgins went out, that indicate that probation for them had carried. That the light shining for the five wise virgins shows that probation had not closed for them. That's what caused the judgment of the church to begin, for the separating the five wise from the five foolish. The five foolish comes to their end, the five wise continues on when they call for the admission. In other words, the five wise continues on with the fifth group of believers, Matthew 20, verse 6, the last group. Whereas the foolish virgins stay with the fourth group of believers and close out the judgment of the dead and comes to their end. When they call for the admission, they are lightly told by the Yahshua himself, "I know you not, for the sign of the coming kingdom that this parable brings forth is very obviously of the special message with the extra oil that announces the judgment of the living." Now, just what I said, for the message that awakens the open-hearted truth seekers and that dooms its opposers, the hypocrites and lukewarm in the church, those who are satisfied and think themselves rich and increased with the good, and the need of the nothing, and need of no timely truth, those who never awake unto the fact that they are absolutely destitute. Mind you, these are not my words. Read what Yeshua says unto the little saint. Revelation 3:14-18. And unto the angel of the church of the Laodicean write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and the true witness, which the beginning of the creation of the earth. For I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hard. Now, who is he addressing here? He's addressing one single person, and that's the angel, which is the prophet with inspiration, that has charge over the seventh candlestick of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And that was Brother Stephen Johnson, 1970 to 2003. Brother Johnson was in charge of that candlestick of the Adventist Church. One single man. I would if thou were cold or hot. So Yeshua is personally, specifically addressing Brother Johnson face to face. So then, because thou art lukewarm, and so Yeshua passed judgment on him. He said, well, I've done proved that you're lukewarm, and you're neither cold nor hot. I will spew thee out of my mouth. So when he says, I will spew thee out of my mouth, that means if you don't acknowledge what I'm telling you and repent, then I will spew thee out of my mouth. And Brother Johnson was given time to repent, and he wouldn't do it. So Yeshua spewed him out of his mouth at the atonement of 2002 at Kermit, Texas. I think that was September the 26th or the 28th of 2002. Behold, or because thou sayest I am rich and increased with the goods and have need of the nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked, I counsel thee to buy me gold tried in the fire, that thou mayest be rich, and white raiment, that thou mayest be clothed, and that the shame of thy nakedness do not appear, and anoint thine eyes with the eye salve, that thou mayest see. Another view of this tragic truth is given in the Luke 14:16-24. Then said he unto him, for a certain man made a great supper, and bade many, and sent his servants of his at the supper time to say unto them that were bidden, come, for all the things are now ready. And they all with the one consent began to make excuse. For the first said unto him, I have bought a piece of the ground, and I must needs go and see it. I pray thee have me excused. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of the oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray thee have me excused. And another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I can not come. So that servant came and showed his master these things. Then the master of the house, being angry, said unto his servant, go out quickly into the streets and lanes of the city, and bring in hither the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind. And the servant said, already it is done as thou hast commanded, and yet there is room. And the Yeshua said unto the servant, go out into the highways and hedges, and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. For I say unto you, that none of those men which were bidden shall taste of my supper. In this parable are seen 2 periods of the time. The first period is while the planet of the salvation, faith in the blood of Yeshua of the New Testament, the New and Living Way, Hebrews 10:19-20, has made many. That was the present truth. Luke 14:60, unto the marriage supper, the time from the apostles until the time of his last servant with the last message. Okay. So, this went on from the time of the apostles. Yahshua left in charge of the kingdom of heaven here on earth when he went back to heaven 2,000 years ago. And the last servant was Brother Steady Johnson, 2002. That's how long this message lasted. And sends unto his people the time all things are ready. For the next period is the time in which his last servant, Brother Steady Johnson, served. Luke 14:70. This servant is sent, and we are told, at supper time and the end of the day, indicating, let's reread that again. It says, in this parable, in this parable are seen two periods of the time. The first period is while the plan of the salvation of the brother everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews 10:19-20, the New and Living Way, bade many, Luke 14:16, unto the marriage supper, in the time from the apostles unto the time of his last servant with the last message. Oh, so Brother Johnson didn't have the last, he wasn't the last servant with the last message. Elijah David, that was in Brother Johnson's camp, giving him counsel during the time that Brother Johnson was reigning from 1970 to 2003, was the last servant. And that was anatypical David, Elijah David. That was Elijah of Malachi 4:5. Behold, I'll send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great day of Yahweh. He sent that unto that unwise servant of Matthew 24:45-47. That one that was unwise. He sent that to him, Brother Steady Johnson. He is the unwise one. But the one with the last message was Elijah David. And I give that to Brother Johnson, July 14, 2002, at Kermit, Texas. And he rejected it, and that's what cost him his ministry and everything. For Yahweh sends unto his people the time that all things are ready. Well, that was sent by Elijah, given to Elijah David, to give to Brother Johnson in 2002. He said, all things are ready. The next period is the time in which this last servant, Elijah David, served. Luke 14:17, the servant is a sent, we are told, at the supper time. At the end of the day, at the end of the day is your 12th prayer by the tower. Brother Johnson said the end of the day was your 11th prayer by the tower. Not so. Did you holler before him, set the stage for it? He said it was also the 11th hour was the last hour. For the servant sent, we are told, at the supper time, and the 12th parabolic hour is at the end of the parabolic day. Okay. Oh, it was at the end of the 11th parabolic day, when the 11th parabolic day was when the sun was going down on the 11th hour, and about to come up the next morning on the 12th hour. Oh, I see. For this servant is sent, as we are told, at the supper time, at the end of the day, indicating that he bears the last message. Moreover, he is at the first sent unto those who have previously been bidden, that is, unto those who were already in the gospel or the present truth of the sanctuary, of the restored sanctuary, with this present truth on a daily basis. In the true church of the house of David, at the outset, he is to contact a class of people deeply engrossed with the cares of this life, and is to tell them that all things are now ready, that if they wish, they can now prepare and go unto the wedding, there for the enjoying of the bridegroom's banquet. And there goes my song that I wrote years ago, Come to the Banquet and Dine. Okay, this is the last call for the supper. But what happens if they excuse themselves from having anything to do with the banquet just then? Some lay the blame on their professions, while others blame having to make a living for the family, whereupon the master of the house angrily sends his servant unto the poor and unto the afflicted, unto those who are hungry and not too busy, to take heed unto those who are not so encumbered with the business and home that they cannot answer his call. This great thing takes place in the city. This is in the Mount Zion, the true church, the true living church at this time. Proper, hyphen, the church, because it's referring to the Adventist church at this time, but of course that back in 1931-32, when Vitalis was just beginning as a successor to Ellen G. White for the Shepherd's Rod. For the poor, those who realize that they are not rich and increased with the good, come in, but still there is room for more. Then it is that the lesser of that servant commands that he should go after those who are on the highways and hedges, those outside the church circle, even unto the ends of the earth, the hedges, that before the servant goes to the highways and hedges on his last mission, the master emphatically informs him that those who had been bidden and who excuse themselves from coming in are to be entirely excluded from the banquet, that none of them will be permitted even for the tasting of his supper, that by the turning a deaf ear unto the call, these have closed their own probationary time, and that there is now nothing that can alter the situation. After this, the servant's compelling cry goes out to the nations, and the master's house is filled with the wedding takes place, and the bridegroom serves all that are in the house, but none others. For the same event is again given from another point of view, this time by the Gospel prophet, Isaiah 52, 1 and 2. Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion. Put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. For henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. Shake thyself from the dust. Arise and sit down, O Jerusalem. Loose thyself from the bands of thy neck, O captive daughter of Zion. For this particular prophecy discloses that while the church, Jerusalem, and Zion is asleep and naked with the unclean in her midst, and in the captivity among the Gentiles away from her own land, an awakening cry, a message, comes urging her to arise and put on her beautiful garment, for the wicked declares the cry will no more come into her, for they are to be utterly cut off for the signs of the kingdom, you see, are even more important for one to observe than are the signs of Yahshua's second coming. If one should miss the sign of the kingdom, then the knowledge of the signs of Yahshua's second coming would profit nothing, for all such will be frightened at his return and say unto the mountains and rocks, fall on earth, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of his wrath is come. And who shall be able to stand? Revelation 6:16-17. Are the efforts for the setting up of the premillennial kingdom. Now this premillennial means in the last parabolic hour, the 12th of the parabolic hour, while the probation still lingers for this world, old world. So the premillennial kingdom is set up in the 12th parabolic hour. And that's what closes out the 12th parabolic hour, when this premillennial kingdom is finally set up. And it's called the purified church, accompanied by the great signs and wonders, by the noise and pomp. To this question, the Yahshua answered. Matthew 13:31-33. For the kingdom of the heaven is like unto a grain of the mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seed. But when it is grown, it is the greatest among the herbs, and becometh a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof. Another parable spake he unto them, the kingdom of the heaven is like unto the 11, which a woman took and hid in the 3 measures of the meal, till the whole was leavened. Zechariah 4:6. Not by the might, nor by the power, but by my spirit, saith Yahshua the host. Not a blast or a boom, and not a burst either, but the plain, quiet truth, brothers, sisters, is what saves you and brings the kingdom into the being. What is this premillennial kingdom like, and what other signs precede its establishment? Well, the answer unto this question comes through the Ezekiel. Ezekiel 36:23-28. And I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen during the 12th parabolic hour, closing out this old earth history, which you have profaned in the midst of them during that time. And the heathen shall know that I am the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, saith the Yahshua, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. For I will take you from among the heathen, and I will get you out of all countries where, and will bring you into your own land. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness, and from all your idols will I cleanse you. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you an heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them, and you shall dwell in the land that I gave unto your fathers. That would be the land of Israel. It's been cleared out right now. I'm prepared for that very thing. And that's going to take another 3 years. And you shall be my people, and I will be your Yahweh. Here are the additional signs. Signs that are displayed within and without, for the man himself, the scars and the defects which sin has written upon the bodies of the Yahweh's people are washed away. And also the sin hardened heart is carved out of them, and a new tender heart that delights in the keeping Yahweh's statutes and judgments, Leviticus 23:1-44, that's the statutes of the sanctuary system, and that's restored and into full operation again here in these in this time. Just sit in. When does this take place? And that's a question mark. And then the answer is, after the Yahweh takes his saints from among the heathen. Let's read that again. It takes place after Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, takes his saints, 144,000 that he has redeemed, Revelation 14:1-4, the 144,000 from among the heathen, out of all countries. And that's 144,000 was gathered out of the four corners of the earth. They were the first fruit harvest, and then you go back with 144,000 to the four corners of the earth again with them, and they bring their Gentile brethren the second time with them. Yahshua goes to get the 144,000 on the first round, and then the 144,000 with Yahshua goes back on the second round and get their Gentile brethren. And that's Revelation 7:9-10. And bring them unto their own land. Say, the scriptures. Thus shall they dwell in the land that Yahweh anciently gave unto their fathers, and thus shall they be his people, and he their Yahweh. So Yahshua then inherited these people of old time, the ones that were sanctified by his blood at the cross. Now Yahshua inherits them in the last days, and they join him in his millennial kingdom, which is the kingdom of David. Here you see that no one can meet the Yahweh face to face and live with him eternally without the first having this body cleansing and heart changing experience. Very evidently, none who remain ignorant of these signs of the coming kingdom will have this experience, and consequently shall never enter into it, never be fitted to live and reign with the Yahshua. Since these signs are so vital unto the salvation, they should be no longer be overlooked, but should receive first the consideration if we expect Yahshua's second coming to be for our good, not for our damnation. Indeed, for this obvious reason, it is at this late hour that this important message is brought unto our attention. For this great truth is again foretold in the words of Zechariah 12:5-14, Zechariah 13:1-5. And the governors of the Judah shall say in their heart, the inhabitants of the Yerushalayim shall be my strength, and the Yahweh, sure of the host, the son of Yahweh. And that day will I make the governors of the Judah like an hearth of fire among the wood, and like a torch of fire in a sheaf, and they shall devour all the people round about on the right hand and on the left, and Yerushalayim shall be established again in her own place, even in Yerushalayim, for the Yahshua also shall save the tents of Judah first, that's the house of David. That's David's household first. That the glory of the house of the David and the glory of an inhabitants of Jerusalem do not magnify themselves against Judah, the laity. the ones that live around Jerusalem. Those that live in Jerusalem are the leadership of Judah. The third, those that live in the houses out in the country away from Jerusalem are the laity of Judah. So the house, the leadership in Jerusalem are not going to exalt themselves against the common people that live, that's the citizens of their kingdom. In that day shall the Yahshua defend the inhabitants of the Jerusalem, and he that is people among them at that day shall be as the David, and the house of the David shall be as the Yahweh, as the angel of the Yahweh before them, and it shall come to pass in that day that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against the Jerusalem, and I will pour out upon the house of the David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of the grace and of the supplications, and they shall look upon me, whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his own only son, and shall be in the bitterness for him as one that is in the bitterness for his firstborn. And that day shall there be a great mourning in Jerusalem, as the mourning of the head of the Rimmon, in the valley of the Megiddon, and the land shall mourn, every family apart, the family of the house of the David apart. There is your house of the David. And their wives apart, the family of the house of the Nathan apart, that's the prophet for David. And their wives apart, the family of the house of the Levi apart. And there's your priesthood of the sanctuary. And their wives apart, the family of the Shimei apart, and their wives apart, all the families that remain, every family apart and their wives apart. Okay. And that day there shall be a fountain open unto the house of the David and unto the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and for the uncleanness. And it shall come to pass in that day, saith Yahshua the host, son of Yahweh, that I will cut off the names of the idols out of the land, and they shall no more be remembered. And also I will cause the shepherd, the prophet, and the unclean spirit to pass out of the land. And it shall come to pass that when any shall yet prophesy, then his father and his mother that beget him shall say unto him, thou shalt not live, for thou speakest lies in the name of the Yahshua. And his father and his mother that begat him shall thrust him through when he prophesied. And it shall come to pass in that day that the prophet shall be ashamed every one of his vision when he hath prophesied, neither shall they wear a rough garment to deceive, but he shall say, I am no prophet, I am a husbandman, for man taught me to keep cattle from my youth. For the revival and reformation herein presented, mourning and heart searching caused by the appreciativeness of the Yahweh's great mercy and goodness shall be in the day that the governors of the Judah say, the inhabitants of Jerusalem shall be my strength, in the day that the Yahshua makes even the most feeble among them, as is the David, and the house of the David as the house of the Yahweh, as the angel of the Yahweh, when this thorough reformation takes place, then the cleansing fountain shall be opened unto the whole house of the David. In that day, the wicked shall be cut off and kept out of the house of the David, and the false teachers, the prophets, and the prophets shall feel, let's do that again. In that day, the wicked shall be cut off and kept out of the house of the David, and the false teachers, that is, the false prophets, shall feel ashamed of having ever taught their private interpretations of the Scripture. Then shall men fully realize that though they could be taught by men to keep cattle, that no man could teach them to prophesy. That this office is restricted unto the spirit of the prophecy, that no prophecy of the kingdom of Scriptures is of any private interpretation. Is this cleansing heaven fitted pre-millennial kingdom set up in the probationary time? Question mark. And I say, yes, it is. But the answer is, for the finding of the answer by V.T. Hodder, he says, we shall turn to the prophecy of the Micah, chapter 3, verse 12, and chapter 4, verse 1 and 2. Therefore shall Zion for your sake be plowed as a field, and Jerusalem shall become heaps, and the mountain of the house as the high places of the forest. But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountains of the house of the Yahweh shall be established in the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and the people shall flow unto it. And many nations shall come and say, come, and let us go up unto the mountain of the Yeshua, or the mountain of the Yahweh, the father of Yeshua, and unto the house of the Yahweh of the Jacob. And he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his path, for the law shall go forth of the Zion, and the word of the Yahweh from Jerusalem. Here we are told that in the latter days, in our time, that the ancient kingdom that was destroyed will be reestablished and exalted above all the kingdoms. Then the people shall flow into it, because the law shall go forth of the Zion in the 12th hour, and the word of the Yahshua from the Yahrushua for the preaching of the plan of the salvation of the brother of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, the new and living way, Hebrews 10, 19, and 20. That's what they call the last gospel work. Therefore, is to be finished while his headquarters stand in the Holy Land. Okay, thus the kingdom is set up in the probationary time, and this last 12th hour, and the time of the salvation and the judicial purification. For after it is set up, other people from many nations flow into it. For this is what the Bible says, and certain it is that this is what is to be. For not even the devil can defeat Yahweh's plan or cheat his people. Oh yes, the devil will try for to explain away what the Scriptures say, but he can never make them say something other than what they do say. Besides, anyone taking the devil's word and the preference unto the Yahweh's deserve the devil's reward, and I am sure he will not be cheated out of it. Since these signs of the times in the addition unto others are of the far greater importance than the Lisbon earthquake, the dark day, and the falling of the stars, we had better awaken to the demand which they impose upon us, and which are bound to fit us for the second coming of Yeshua and for our home in the kingdom of the heaven. For the kingdom of heaven. But if these signs cannot awaken us, then it is positive that they will cause us to slide down into the bottomless pit while the dreaming of being rich and increased with the goods and the need of nothing, supposedly on the way to the glory land, what a disappointment and what weeping and gnashing of the teeth that would be. Who is to drive the Gentiles out of the land? For the answer is in Zechariah 1:14-17 and 20:21. So the angel that communed with me said unto me, cry thou, saying, thus saith Yeshua of the host, son of Yahweh, I am zealous for the Jerusalem's sake, for the Zion with a great jealousy, and I am very sore displeased with the heathen that are at ease, for I was but a little displeased, and they helped forward the affliction. Therefore, thus saith Yeshua of the host, son of Yahweh, I am returned unto Jerusalem from heaven, with the mercy. My house shall be built in it, in Jerusalem, saith Yeshua of the host. And a line shall be stretched forth upon Jerusalem. Cry yet, saying, thus saith ye Yeshua of the host, my city through the prosperity shall yet be spread abroad, and Yeshua shall yet comfort Zion, and shall yet choose Jerusalem. And Yeshua showed me the four carpenters. Then said I, what are come these to do? And he spake, saying, these are the horns which have scattered Judah, so that no man did lift up his head. But these are come to fray them, to cast out the horns of the Gentiles, which lifted up their horn over the land of Judah to scatter it. Now, the land of Judah is not the whole land of Israel. The land of Judah has its own boundaries, right around Jerusalem, the Mount Zion hill, where Jerusalem sits on top of. Obviously, one part of the Gentile nation shall come against the part that is in the Holy Land and chase them out to make room for the Yahweh's people. Then will the Yeshua, the feet, stand on the Mount of Olives, and the Mount shall cleave in the midst thereof and make therein a very great valley. Thus shall the Yeshua open the way, son of Yahweh, open the way for his people to flee there unto the valley where the Yeshua's feet stand and all the saints with them. Zechariah 14:4-5. For this truth, you see, supersedes all the truth, for without it, your other truth will not profit you, will not take you into the kingdom. It is the last mile of all the miles of our faith through life that takes us home. We have gone this long, let us therefore keep on going right on to glory land, which is no longer beyond the horizon, for the mile ahead is indeed the last mile that will take us home. This brings the end of Two-Time Degree number 44.